Thank you very much. So I'd like to thank first for the opportunity of talking about some of my work. I'm going to talk about this work that we try to resolve the cosmological singularity using ASCP. Since I know that people in perimeter study many different topics, I wanted to talk a little bit about another work that I do on dark energy searches. I don't know if I'll have time to talk about it today after this, but if I don't have time, I'll be glad to talk to you here in Friday. So first I'll talk about this work done in collaboration with Professor Bernenberger, Professor Schmidt Das, and some postdocs that are now professors in different universities, where we do an attempt to resolve the cosmological singularity, an attempt to evolve the cosmological situations in the presence of a cosmological singularity using ADS-CFT as a tool. I'd like to point out that our goal is modest in the sense that we want to study, have a quantitative analysis of how the bounds regime, where you have those high curvature, really high quantum problem, can be tackled using the dual description in the gate. I guess our work shows a little bit of the limits and strengths that using the great gauge gravity duality has on studying space-like singularities in those bounds geometries. So have in mind that this is, we're testing the limits, we're testing the strengths of this framework. So first, the motivation. So the standard cosmological model describes really well and in a very precise way our universe, our expanding universe. However, it has some problems. And one of them, I could say, is the singularity problem, maybe the most dramatic one of them, and the one that we usually don't attack because it's very hard. And singularities appear in many cosmological models. They are actually unavoidable if you have general relativity with no energy condition. So in many different models, either of extension or bouncing, you will always have to deal with singularity. You will always have a singular behavior, either initial singularity or Big Bang singularity. So we are interested in bouncing cosmologies. So we have a period of contraction followed by a period of extension. The period of extension is our cosmological model, our standard cosmological model. However, if you construct models like that, it's very difficult in the context of effective field theory and GR with no energy conditions to have non-singular. So you always have a bounce, singularity at the bounds. To avoid that, we do many tricks. We can violate the no energy conditions, or we can go beyond Einstein's gravity. But of course, this introduces some difficulties, some gradient stabilities, goals, seconds, and all the other problems that are studied in the literature. So we have this problem. We want to construct bouncing cosmologies. The singularity is always there, or a high curvature region, even if non-singular, it appears in the bouncing region. But we want to make predictions. We want to know how the fluctuations are today, so we could compare with observation. So we have to deal with those high curvature. And since we don't have an UV complete theory for gravity, we use some techniques like matching conditions. Maybe this, like matching conditions. I show here a space-time diagram. It's not a Penrose diagram. It's just a very simple space-time diagram of a matter bounce. So this is the contraction followed by the extension. This is the Hubble radius. So when we get to a point here where this curvature effect becomes really strong, you use matching conditions until the maybe equal point in the future and any reform. But using those matching conditions presents a lot of problems, like which matching conditions are you going to use? Dirichlet, Neumann, Meigs, what are you going to use? Which surface are you going to use to match? A space-like surface? What are you going to do? Some of those are problems that are described in this beautiful paper by Ruth and Vernitsky, where they try to motivate those matching conditions for bounce. So the challenge is, how do we evolve those perturbations through these high curvature regions without invoking matching conditions that are ambiguous? So we hope that holography helps us with that path. So, and we use the ADS correspondence program. So the ADS correspondence is this wonderful, not theory, but conjecture that started with Maldacena that says that if I have a gravity theory in the bulk of an ADS space-time, this is dual, this is equivalent of a gauge theory that lives in the boundary of this ADS. In the most famous realization of this theory, you have a type 2B string theory in ADS 5S5 that is dual to an N equals 4 super Young Mu's theory on the boundary. So the parameters of the theory relate in this way. So you have that the string coupling is equals to the string, the coupling of the Young Mu's, and the radius of the ADS and the string length depend on the Tuft coupling, that is the G Young Mu's time step. We know this theory in some limits. For example, when the Tuft coupling is big and large N, we have that the supergravity approximation. So we can describe really well what happens in by supergravity solutions. However, we only know how to deal with field theory when the coupling is small. So when the Tuft coupling is small, our field theory is under control, but the supergravity solutions break in the ball. So our hope is to use exactly those two reasons to treat the singularity. So in a very cartoon way, what our goal is, our main goal is, to first of all, use ADS, to deform ADS to construct a cosmological solution that has a singularity in the middle. Of course, ADS is not a cosmology, it's a safari. So we try to put a cosmological singularity in the middle by deforming the ADS. We want that asymptotically this ADS, this is ADS in the minus infinity and plus infinity. We can treat the bulk theory as weakly coupled in those limits. When the bulk theory becomes strongly coupled, we use only the boundary description, the gauge description, to evolve the theory. So since the singularity is here, we cannot have the supergravity equations valid here. So we do all the evolution in the gauge theory, because the gauge theory, we hope it's still valid in the limit as Gn is small, but we large n. So this is our question, and at the same time, our hope, our the philosophy we're going to use. Is the gauge theory well-defined at this region, in the region where you don't have a well-defined description of your bulk? And another question, can I evolve this theory until past the singularity that here I put at t equals zero? Another question that we wish to address is, do I have, what is the solution of my bulk here at late? What is the emergency gravity theory that I have in the bulk after passing the singularity? And we should do this all in the context of cosmological fluctuations. We're interested in fluctuations and not in the behavior of the background.
A question. So we don't live in an NDS space. So what is so I mean how could we use NDS to do that?
I'd say that our work is more of an exploratory to see how fluctuations emerge from a bounce. Of course, this is not a cosmological bounce. This is, doesn't describe cosmology. I mean, five dimensions is kind of in ADS. But since the ADS-CFT correspondence, the validity of this in F4W is not known. We use this as a tool, as a lab, to see, can we say something about the behavior of the fluctuations after they pass singularity? Are we, how are we doing in our method? And then if this is good, maybe we could generalize our model. But this is only a exploratory. So this is not at all about. So this is not new. Previous attempts were done by many different groups, a lot of them by Newport here at Springer. And they use different frameworks as ours. For example, they use your M3 as your string. But the idea is the same. The general idea is the same. It's to use the gauge theory to evolve the theory when you have that the supergravity description rate. So in very general lines, I want to explain how we're going to do that, how we're going to deform our geometry to have this singularity. So like I told you, we want that at t minus infinity, we have our supergravity in ADS-CFT. So we want the ADS solution at minus infinity. And the correspondent boundary theory of that will be the usual Young-Mills with coupling constant that is constant. Then we turn on a coupling, Young-Mills coupling that depends on time. But we want that this dependence to be something like that. So it is constant for a while, and then it's going to slowly vary, not so slowly here in this picture, but in a controlled way, vary until it reaches zero here. So my Young-Mills three, and it goes back to the normal value of the G Young-Mills. So in this way, I could have the normal Young-Mills theory here, and then some deformed Young-Mills with a time-dependent coupling. So going back, I turn on this coupling in the Young-Mills theory. From the ADS-CFT dictionary, this would correspond to turning on non-normalizable mode in the sugar. So this would mean that I'll have a time-dependent dilaton in our case in the supergravity theory. And until this point, I can do that. I can use the ADS-CFT correspondence because the coupling is more or less constant, so it varies just a little bit. Until I reach a point that I call here minus t, where this gauge theory really evolves according to this time-dependent coupling. And until here, I can evolve my solutions in the supergravity theory using this supergravity equation of motion with a time-dependent coupling. So until here, I can use my supergravity equations with a time-dependent dilaton. And from this point on, my supergravity solutions break. I'll have a singularity at t equals zero, and I'll have to describe everything in my gauge theory that is weak.
But here, you also have to deal with the same issue that you mentioned about where you match. Right? So the
exactly.
So you're going to have to choose for your size in the box.
Yeah, but at the same time, I will match at this point, and the ADS-CFT correspondence already gives me this match. I know. Do you agree that if I evolve my theory until here with my supergravity
equation? Well, the moment you're talking about the ball, I don't know what that
I see.
I've chosen many slices in my box.
The question is the gate invariant.
We went above the fluctuation of this dilution until this point, have the solution, and they say that this, the normalizable mode of this delta phi, it is equivalent at this time to operator.
No, I understand. So this is my boundary, and this is the time that you have. Inside the slice could be doing this. I mean, you go way, way back.
I see.
So
I
how
see.
What slice should we use to
so
what happens in
the okay, so I guess we used something like a space like slice because we use the same time. Of course at the t equals tp. So we really match a t equals tb. And we use a Pfefferman gradient extension, so the normalizable mode goes as d to the yes, I'm going to use the field at a defined time tb. I'm going to evolve this field until this. Maybe it becomes more clear when it. And our hope is that we can I can evolve the gate theory further. So our hope is that the gate theory is well defined. Since the coupling is becoming small at this time where the system. So this is the way, like the general behavior of the coupling test. And how we do that. So we do that by deforming the ABS solution. So we have the solution of the 10-dimensional theory, where Z will be the, I'm here working in coordinates of ABS, so that Z will be the radial component that goes to the bulk. Here I'll have this 4D metric, and my only two dynamical variables will be the 4D metric and the time-dependent dilation that here I still say that is a phi of x. And remember that the dilation relates to the DS in this. So for this to be a solution, I'll have to respect those two equations, the two 4D equations. So the Ricci tensor should be equal to the derivatives of phi of the dilaton field and this equation of motion for the dilaton. So this is our solution. And this could be embedded in a type theory as done in those works by so a solution for this 4D equations could be what I'm calling here a Friedmann-Hopf-Walker type solution, where we choose that the metric, the 4D metric, is going to have this form. Here, T is going to be formal time, just to make things easier for us. And we can find the solutions, the Stars-Kastner solution for the dilaton and for the scale factor. And here I show the Penrose diagram for this Poincaré coordinate. So at t equals 0, I can see that I have a singularity. For t smaller than 0, I'm describing this collapsing geometry. And for t bigger than 0, I'm describing the extending cosmology. So since ds is equals to e to the phi to the dilaton, this will go to 0 at the singularity. And I define this time tb, where my supergravity description is going to break, where I'm going to map my dilaton evolution to the boundary. And this is defined by the time where the tough coupling becomes a fourth one.
So this is a this is now a 3 plus 1 dimensional FRW.
Exactly.
And it looks like it looks radiation dominated because A equals the square of T, right?
Yeah.
So but I don't see where the radiation is. So I guess I don't quite understand. Does the phi, does phi have an effect on the state like radiation?
So.
Phi doesn't have a potential. Maybe can you go back to the action for phi? It's just a.
So we'll have a solution for phi in the.
Yeah.
We have an equation for phi in it. But by solving this equation, we can see that the phi
is. Right. I mean, if there's no potential for scalar field, then this pressure is called the density. Radiation. And actually, something more basic. This is a 3 plus 1 dimensional geometry.
Yes.
But then you had ADS 5. So how did that happen, I guess?
Yeah, so this is only describing the 4D, you're correct. So we are going to do perturbation theory. So we're going to have perturbations of phi. And we're going to, so now we have two modes. We have the normalizable mode and the normal, non-normalizable mode. That describes how you go to the z corner. So you have a solution. If you solve this equation, you have the a solution for the 4D plus an equation for the 5D.
This is the brain, is that right? Or what is that? That is the.
So that is this coordinate that goes to
right.
The.
So what happens to that here?
So I'm not describing. I'm just describing the solution for the 4D. Because those equations are only for the 4D.
Okay.
I didn't put a slide here, but what we are going to consider it is perturbation of the scalar field in this ADS background. In this ADS 5. And then for this perturbation of the kiloton, I'll have an equation for the Z component that shows how I go for the boundary. And I'll have a solution for the time and space behavior of delta phi. So this solution has the behavior that we wanted. It presents the singularity. In the middle, and we know how to treat the perturbations in this supergravity theory until TB, where the coupling becomes absorbed. So, in a very catch way, I want to present what we are going to do. So, our goal is to be, again, this is a simple time here conformal time and space diagram. Here I show the Hubble radius, just really schematically. I want, in the end, to know how the perturbations, what is the spectral index of the perturbations here at the future outside the Hubble radius. That is what we observe. So the input will be the spectrum of dilaton perturbations here when the perturbations are outside the Hubble radius before times minus TB. So my initial solution will be the vacuum solution of BDS. However, when they enter the horizon, the Hubble radius, they suffer squeezing because you have an A dot dot over A term in the equations for the time dependence. So this becomes a scaling invariant spectrum. They have a scaling invariant spectrum for the perturbations of the dilaton. And this is our input of the tree. So I start here in the bulk with a scaling invariant spectrum. At time TB, I will map this into the boundary. And I will do the evolution of passing through the singularity only in the gauge theory until a time plus TB, where I'll try to reconstruct back the bulk, this inflatone, the perturbations of the gauge into inflatone. dilatant perturbations here, and then I'll evolve again. So this is the idea of our study. However, I can already tell you guys that our hope that we were not going to need matching conditions didn't happen. We actually have to impose matching conditions in a region really close to the singularity in the bulk, but in the gauge 3. We hope that this procedure is a little bit more well-defined than imposing matching conditions in gravitational background, since it's like imposing matching conditions in a quantum mechanical problem. And I hope that I can show you how we do that. So just in general lines, that's how we're playing. So like I told you here, I'll put a perturbation of the dilaton that is only a superscalar field in this deformed ADS, baseline. What is the corresponding bounding theory of this deformed ADS? So in normal ADS CFT, I have this super Young-Mills theory with a constant G Young-Mills. In our case, G Young-Mills is going to have a time dependence. This will appear as a time dependence here in front of the gauge sector. We are only studying the gauge sector here, so as a first approximation. So this is our Young-Mills theory with a time dependence. As you saw here, my slices are actually FRW. So my boundary is actually FRW, but this is conformal to flat. So we're going to study the boundary theory in a flat background. Otherwise, we're going to have all these openings. And since we're mapping dilaton perturbations, we have to study the perturbations of the gauge field in the gauge 3. And we're going to study this in linear order, so all we have left is only the perturbations of the scalar of the gauge field coupled to the value of the background of the dilaton. So the mapping, like I told you guys, I have the perturbation of the dilaton field in the bulk. This has a normalizable and a normalizable mode. I'm going to turn on only the normalizable mode because I want this to fall off at the boundary. So it goes as z to the 4 pi. This is the value at the boundary. And at that time, tb, I want to map all my dilaton fluctuations to the correspondent operator, the dual operator in the field 3. That will be the trace of f squared. So this is our map. And then the question is, can I evolve this in the boundary? That is the main question. That is the hard part. So as we can see here in the Lagrangian, we always have this factor here in front of the kinetic term. This goes as 1 over t. So obviously, this term in front of kinetic term diverges when you reach the singularity point. We do then a field redefinition. So in the way that the evolution of my field is not divergent in the singularity point at t equals 0. And then we find this equation for the redefined variables with this time dependent. So what is this telling us? This is telling us that when I reach t equals 0, that is the singularity, this mass, or you can call it a potential, it diverges. So that is the problem that we encounter. And if you calculate the energy momentum tensor at the boundary, you can see that you have infinite particle production at t equals 0. So this is a reflect of that. So
sorry, can I just a field theory. You're saying that there's a time dependent mass and the mass goes to infinity?
Yeah, so if you see here, if I calculate the equations of motion for the gate field in this new rescaled variables, I can write this equation as this in this gate. And then I'll have a time dependent mass that would depend on derivatives, the time derivatives of the hilate. That would be like this. This goes as one of two square for the profile that I chose, for the dilaton profile that we chose. So it goes like this.
Right. So you cannot, are you saying you cannot solve
these equations? So now how do I evolve when I have this here in the middle? If you go to the normal variables, not the rescaled variables, This shows itself like a branch cut at t equals 0. So there's a branch cut in the solution exactly at t equals 0. So we cannot evolve them further. And the presence of this branch cut already shows us that some type of batching condition needs to be done. Some regularization procedure needs to be done. And that is what we're going to try to do.
So
yes,
m squared goes as 1 over t squared, and then I just want to see what the differential equation we're thinking about. So you have 1 over t squared there, and then I guess from the derivative you get a double dot.
Exactly, a double dot, because they only depend on.
I mean, that's not a question like that, so I guess I'm not quite sure at all. There's always a way to, there's a regular solution that goes through, and then there's a singular one. So
yeah, so you have. You're going to have a J solution that goes to zero and the Y solution that goes to infinity. And when you try to evolve this, you're going to select only one of those.
Yeah.
Right? And it's going to give you a behavior that falls out to infinity that we believe it comes from this part of that.
We cannot pick the one that doesn't go to infinity?
Yeah, we didn't want to, because the other one goes. Yeah.
It goes to zero at zero.
At zero.
And then it comes back up.
Yeah, but then you have a branch, right? So somehow you have to match something there. You have to choose one and match it equals zero, right? Because of this branch cut of the solution.
Well, I mean, it's just the Bessel function. I don't see what the problem is. But maybe you said the initial condition somehow that you cannot, you always have a.
Yeah, so if you go to the other variables, this will blow up at equals zero. So this is already showing us there is a problem. And when we at equals zero, and when we compute the energy moment tensor of the boundary state, this goes infinite again at this at equals zero. So we have in part the thing. Although the theory is free, it is effectively
yeah, so
zero.
Why do I care about what matters is what comes out on the other side. Because under the definition of particles is not.
Yeah, when we try to do the matching, because some matching is required because you have it is zero. So although it's a normal matching of the conditions, we get that the coefficient they diverge. The coefficients of this matching are not well. So we try to do this matching in many different ways without applying any regularization. And by all the procedures, we couldn't do it. And we believe it's because of this divergence of the variable. And the appearance of this branch may be helpful. That is. So the presence of the branch cut already tells us that we're going to have to do some matching. Although it's a simple math, some math will be required. And this is bad because our hopes were that we didn't have to use any matching conditions. We could have only a smooth evolution of the field in the gauge theory, especially because the gauge theory is free at t equals zero. However, using matching conditions in this gauge theory, we believe it's better understood because it's like using matching conditions in quantum mechanics problem with a non-trivial potential, with a divergent potential. it doesn't suffer from all the ambiguities that we have on matching in those gravitational backgrounds. So what we do, basically, we are going to put a regularization here at this infinite potential, right? So the potential, it goes like this. When it's here, it's going to have a constant G Young Mills, and then it will evolve. So this basically means that we're going to have the Young Mills theory with a time-dependent coupling in 3 and 1, and in 2, I'll have the usual Young Mills solution of my three. So I'll solve for my modes because I'm doing perturbation theory. In the end, I want the perturbation spectrum. So I go to the Fourier modes, and this is the equation with this new mass term that has this regularization. And by doing that, by doing all the matching conditions, we get this following result. We have that this mode matching is independent, which means that the spectral index of my perturbation is unchanged. So if I enter with some perturbations that goes as k to the 3 halves, they would leave this matching procedure with the same k dependence. However, we found an enhancement on the amplitude of the power spectrum of those perturbations, of the solution of those perturbations. And we believe that is due to finite particle production. So we had infinite particle production. We knew that from the energy momentum tensor. With the regularization procedure, we now have finite particle production happening after you pass through the.
The block side, what you did was you had a solution for the Lagrangian equation.
Yes.
That's all you have.
Yeah.
Now, if there is really an idiosyncratic span, there must be also some self-consistent equation to solve in the boundary that tells you how this mass is evolved.
Yes.
You shouldn't import it by hand. Because that's what you're doing right now, is you're assuming that the mass is time dependent. But I mean, the idea is you have a field theory and it should be self contained.
But this comes directly from this, and this comes from this. We didn't do it. We put by hand the Dillaton dependence. And then from the CFT dictionary, this Dillaton, the non-normalizable mode of this Dillaton, it translated to this change in the.
Yeah, I guess I'm saying that the time dependence of phi of this would be somehow.
Isn't it coming from the Dillaton here? This deformation of the Young Mills comes from the correspondence.
Right.
And the time dependence of the Dillaton comes from the time dependence that we imposed in the box. So. Yeah, so there is a kinetic term for phi, and we are putting in the. Because we're only interested in the perturbations of delta A. Oh, in the action here, yes, there is. Yes, but. Yeah, no, it's that we want to study the delta A mu problem, the perturbations of that. So we only want to study how the perturbations of A mu evolve with in this. So this would be perturbation theory. Here would only enter the background quantity, but then, and here would only enter.
Yeah, but I guess the point is that then the evolution of phi itself depends on the particle production.
Yeah, so then you have a kinetic term for the delta phi, not the Dillaton at the background, but the variation of the Dillaton here, because this is only a perturbation theory. And this is, we are not considering. Because we want to know the evolution of delta A. And in linear perturbation theory, if I have delta A evolution here, I need to have phi background. So there is,
But it's that, that's the thing that actually regulates the singularity, because it's, when you have lots of particle production, then phi, the energy comes out of phi,
yeah.
right? So then phi should stop it. System has energy conservation.
Mm-hmm. But don't you agree that the part that has delta phi, delta dilaton, here would be coupled to the background part of the gate? Because
guess,
I'm doing linear.
I guess I'm saying that you have to go beyond the quadratic action.
I agree. We have all this beyond quadratic order, we have nonlinear terms. We have couplings with the other, but we have a lot of problems. We have a lot of, but we want to do a simplified analysis, because if this doesn't work, nothing will work, basically. And it seemed to us that this was not going to work, because we had this energy momentum tensor going through it. So we already thought that this theory would be divergent anyway, or something like that. But we are here only studying the gate theory part, and
right.
in linearized
that cannot be
complicated. But I think what Niamh is saying is that maybe the energy momentum tensor would not diverge if you considered the background variation for phi as a dynamical theory instead of putting it in my head. Like maybe it's the choice that you made for that time variation that causes everything to blow up.
Okay, maybe. I think Shane Sumit does one of his work. He studied with all this, and he actually claims that those terms, they behave more or less like those. The energy moment goes with the same power that is 1 over T four. So I don't think this study is complete, but maybe you're right. Maybe you're right.
Yeah, I'm just saying if you're looking at the full system, and you're solving both the equations of phi and A, then of course
energy. Yes, and those are going to be coupled, right?
Right, exactly.
And
then,
yeah.
So if money is going up, that means that it's taking energy from somewhere else.
Yes, yes,
and
you're
so
right.
They cannot go.
Mm-hmm.
That's okay.
Yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe you're right. Since we only restrict ourselves to this, maybe we're losing part that is going. Yes. I'll think about it. Thank you. So, what is the meaning of adopting this approach of putting this factorization? So, if I'm modifying this Young-Mills profile in the boundary, I'm also modifying the dilaton profile in the pole. So, it could be that I'm removing my singularity by doing this procedure. So, the bulk, it could be that the bulk is not singular anymore. However, is still in a region that we don't know how to describe in supergravity, so it's still a highly curvature region. And also, this modification is only for really close to zero, really close to the singularity. So it's a modification in a regime that we really don't know how things are working. We're also interested only in higher modes, and those modes actually don't feel separate, we believe. So there are consequences for this choice of regular. So then with that, we can evolve our perturbations until a time TB where the gate is well paved, we believe. And we had those modes that are maintain the K dependence of the modes that enter here as the initial condition. But this is not all the story. We still have to reconstruct this in the bulk. What is my dilaton perturbation in the bulk, given that perturbation in the gate field in the bulk? So the duality implies that local fields in the bulk, they are going to be matched to non-local operators in this gift. So what I mean by that, using the approach from Hamilton, Catlett, and Lowy. This means that to reconstruct the bulk field, giving a boundary date, I'll have to use this mirroring function that tells me how am I going to encompass all this non-local behavior of the CFP. And this procedure is definitely not straightforward. It depends on the space times you're using, it depends on the shard you're using, if it's global, point, and it's very hard to construct this mirroring function for the reconstruction. What, sorry? In some cases, like Global AES, they showed, yes, it is in their work, using only normalizable mode. In the Poincaré chart, it is a little bit more complicated.
It's just for linear
perturbation. It's not only for linear. This procedure, no. They claim it. So, for example, in our case, if I have a perturbation here, I could not describe this because then my. So yes, I have to be in the upper green, so then I can reconstruct. So for example, we are studying the ADS Schwarzschild solution. You can reconstruct using one of the boundaries, everything in the calculus except the point. So because the point touches the polarities. So that is more or less what this construction formula tries to do. And it will depend on the space. So for our case, it's clear that we have to only be able to reconstruct close to the pole, to the boundary, sorry. We cannot go deep here in this region, otherwise we're the singularity. It's very hard to construct this mirroring function. This is a distribution. However, since we're only interested in the Fourier mode, and the IR mode, it happens that this formula becomes it becomes like this. So this is the operator. This is the solution for the coordinates, the not the time coordinates, the space coordinates, and not Z. And we can see that this mirroring function is not k-dependent. This k-dependence for IR mode, we're going to drop it. So the only dependence, k-dependence in the reconstruction will come from the operator in the boundary. Since in this work we're mostly interested in only the k-dependence to see if the spectral index changes, this will be enough for our procedure to see that the behavior of the reconstructed bulk will have the same k-dependence as my boundary data, my boundary. To really do this procedure in a better way, it's hard, we didn't quit. So my perturbations in the bulk in the future will have the same spectral index as my perturbations in the future from the boundary. That will have the same spectral index from my perturbations that I, from my initial perturbation. So that is our main conclusion. So the proposal was, yes. Now here, here's general. This is a general procedure for ADS-CFP reconstruction.
Right, but I guess I don't care about the dilatant. I care about the character of the dilatant.
Yeah. So in the other work that I did only with Robert, we showed that if you use the spatial flat page, those curvature perturbations are only going to the dilatant. Because Yeah, you're right. We're interested in curvature. So the curvature perturbations are going to have parts of the metric. And doing ADS-FT with metric, it's more complicated, right? Matching the metric and doing all the things. So we could evade that by choosing a smart gate in the bulk theory. So we chose for the perturbation theory the spatial flat gate. Then the curvature, like the perturbation of the metric goes to zero, and then the perturbation is basically the dilatation. So the same result holds for curvature. So in conclusion, we used ADS-FT as a tool to describe this evolution of this cosmological perturbations through cosmological similarities. Again, our goal is modest. We want to see if we can understand how these bounds affect our perturbations. It's definitely not the full description of this. It's very hard to do the full description of this H3. So our hope was that we could evolve smoothly these perturbations in the gauge theory. We already know that this was not going to be easy because we have a space-like similarity. This touches the boundary. So of course there will be an effect. Of course the energy momentum tensor will blow up. So we already knew we had problems in the boundary that we found. So we found infinite. And we apply this cutoff that we think it's better than the matching conditions that we usually use for bouncing and we found that we have finite particle production, but the main result is that the spectral index isn't for both the curvature and the dilatation. So, five minutes? So maybe no. Yeah. So I was also going to talk about this. So if someone wants to see those two cool telescopes that I'm involved, I'll be glad about it. Oh my god. I wanted to show two telescopes, so I can maybe okay, dark energy, cosmological constant, bad, bunch of models, bad, data keeps getting better. This is our constraint nowadays. So nowadays, we have constraints from BEO, supernova, the CMB, and those shows that we are in a very good concordance with lambda CM. However, we want to answer the questions, can dark energy be something more interesting than cosmological constant? And actually, cosmological constant is really problematic from the theory point of view. We have some hints that the cosmological constant is not a good explanation. This is not a very strong hint, but the new quasar data from BOSS from 2015 showed us some deviation from lambda CM. It's only a 2.5 difference from lambda CM, but it definitely shows that the H that they measure, the H and DA that they measure at Z equals 2.34, it's not the Z that you, the H and the DA that you would expect for, that you expect for lambda CM. So it has a 2.5 difference from the expected value. And this is the first large-scale structure measurement at higher red. So this is a very important measurement, although it's not very significant. If you apply to lambda CDM, for this to be true, you'll have to have a dark energy that has this minus 1.2 ratio of the density. So we have many different probes, many different ways that large-scale structure can attack this problem, many different surveys. So we're really attacking this problem. Or maybe even overshooting a little bit, but we have until 2031 many surveys. And I want to talk about the GPAS, that is the telescope that I participate. It is a photometric survey, but in 54 bands. So it's really cheap cheap to do photometry, but we put many, many bands. So we are doing almost spectroscopy by putting all these really narrow bands together. It's in Spain. This is the telescope. This is the area that we're going to cover, and it overlaps with SDSS, which is good since we can cross-correlate. This is the science that we're going to do. Type 1a supernova, clusters, gravitational lasing, and BAOs. It is a huge survey, huge. And we have a very good uncertainty in the redshift. So our millions of galaxies, millions of quasars, hundreds of supernovas. And we're going to be able to do all this science. And in 2021, maybe we're going to have some good view on dark energy. Here's some of our constraints on the equation of state of here on the distances. How well can I measure distances? How well can I measure the Hubble distance and the angular distance? From quasars in yellow, red galaxies, and emission line galaxies. So we're going to do pretty well. We're going to do better than SDSS. We're not compared. We cannot compare our bounds with LSST and all really late surveys, but we're going to do pretty well. Here we can see that we're going to be able to differentiate from models with different equation of state. And the big thing about JPass is that it is optimized to see quasars. So that hint that I showed you from SDSS from BOSS about the quasar Lyumjev, BOSS was not optimized to see quasars. They invented this search. They were the first ones. It's amazing. But their instrument is not optimized so far away at that equals 2.34. JPass will be. So JPass will probably show the evolution of 8 until set up around 5. Maybe that is too optimistic. But yeah, 3. That is it. Maybe I don't have time to talk about the other telescope, but the other telescope will be a 21-centimeter telescope with the same goal. Yes, my time is... This one will be in Uruguay. It is a collaboration between Brazil, Manchester, and some other places. Uruguay. Yeah. We'll be in Uruguay here because we need this latitude because one of the beams is going to be pointed to the south. And also because of funding reasons that we don't need to talk about.
Where is JPass?
JPass is in Spain. So yeah, the JPass has one in Spain that is operating. We're going to build another one in Chile, exactly the same. In Chile, yeah. And it's going to be exactly the same telescope, but yeah. This one is fully funded by the government in Brazil. Yes. No. Yeah, because we use funded from the Marco School. Exactly. So we use some funding from the South American things. So it couldn't be in Brazil. But in the end, they didn't give us enough money to make this transfer, but we had done anyway. Yeah. And this one is only funded. We still didn't start building, but next year we'll start and has a big participation of Brazil, and which is good. I think we're going to be not the first ones because CHIM is going to win probably. But one of the first to see BAO from 21 centimeters, that is the new window of observation. Yeah, so we're complementary in the what we see, like Sky.pc and in Redshift. So here are, so Bing will be around here, 0.2 to 0.5. We have all these other research. Chime is until 5, I guess, from 3 to 5 or 2 to 5. But the thing is that we're dealing with a single dish, so it's much cheaper. We want to see the evolution of dark energy from BAO at this range. And as you can see here, we have a good, we think we're going to be accurate enough to change this in the equation. Dark. So I guess that's it. If you guys want to see more of the constraints and our forecast, of what, because that is the part I'm doing the collaboration, I'm not doing anything. So thank you very much. Yeah, so we're doing this matching, like we're applying the correspondence when the tough coupling is ordered. So we believe that this is a point where we're safe in both.
Okay, because normally it's always said rather than ADS-CFT, you never have a region where it's both sides.
Exactly, exactly. So we're assuming that at this point, we're in the boundary where those two are safe, but you're totally right, it's not an accurate state. So we're basically using these perturbations in the bulk as an initial condition to evolve my boundary. So don't take super seriously this matching, more like initial conditions to evolve my gauge perturbations in the boundary, giving this this different Lagrangian for the end. It's more that procedure that you're doing.
And then maybe a second question we had here that was also done with DI. I think there's this other approach for inflation with ADS-CFT where they actually match the scan errors and the next step and stuff where they use they match the RT flow of the QFT to the scale factor and the bulk. And I was just wondering if you can make some general comments on the two approaches.
Oh, yeah. I don't know much about that approach. I know more about the other approach that also use ADS,
okay,
not the ones that you. So there is Neil, Ben Krabs, and Hartog. They have a different approach. They use the same, yeah. But in their case, they also modified bulk in a way that could have been like that. But in their case, their theory, their quantum mechanical theory or the boundary theory, will be something that has a potential that is unbounded from below. Something like this, recall. So here you have EDS, and here you'll have the singularity. And they claim this is a well-understood quantum mechanical problem, and they evolve the boundary. They encounter some problems. I guess the Hamiltonian is not up.
Can you do perturbation theory around that? Or have they done that?
I don't think they've done that. But if it's a well defined quantum mechanical problem, maybe.
Well, I don't know.
Yeah.
You don't know if they actually
do that. I don't think they do, really. Yeah, they have to apply some help. Here because this is also not procedure. This procedure is, I don't know, you could apply in many. Yeah, so it's the same idea with a different question. Hours. And the secondary is pattern using PS. And I don't know much about.
Well, there is not, there is obviously the
narrative. No, no. Is to see the observables, because then you have your boundaries here. It's where you. So it's more or less do what we already do, but you see what are the observables in the boundary here. Our boundary is the boundary of where we tend to. So yeah. And here their boundary is the future. And that is all I know.
So it's 2.5 sigma is real, then how much more significant can we make it?
Oh, the 2.5. Yeah, so. Okay, I thought it was here. We believe that with data, we could see a deviation like this with around 5. So this is actually something. We believe we're going to do better anyway because our system is more are more under control for quasars, while theirs have a lot of problems computing time enough. Phasers. So I don't have a perfect answer to that, but it's something we're calculating now and see how much better we can do. But for sure, we could, we have, we're going deep into that. So if there is, if age is changing, we're definitely looking at that for you. It's a fast and things a little.
Thank you.